everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, how are you today? Thumbs up, right? Good thumbs up. Tom's engineering the show for us on the other side of the glass. It is Friday, June the 5th, 2014. I'm a year behind here. An unusual day where Phoenix set a record for a record amount of rainfall. But guess what? It's like a trace of rain in Phoenix, but that qualifies as a record because guess what? It's never rained on this day since they've been keeping records at Sky Harbor Airport. We're coming to you live on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We live stream our show at kvoi.com and on my website, buckmastershow.com. That's the place for all of our programs that we podcast and show archive, and we thank our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun, and TucsonLifestyle.com all have the Buckmaster Show a link on their home pages. Our Friday Focus interview this afternoon, Fernando Molina is with us. Fernando is a spokesman for Tucson Water. Joining me in the studio to question Fernando is Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. The live line number, if you have any questions or concerns about water, and many people do, 790-2040 for the live line, and our Facebook page is Bill Buckmaster. Ladies first, Sarah, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you for coming in. Fernando, how's it going?
We're doing pretty good here today, Bill.
Well, Fernando, as you know, California now has mandatory water restrictions, getting a tremendous amount of national publicity. But the truth is, the drought has been a fact of life for those of us living in Arizona and six other states in the Colorado River Basin. We're really in about the 15th year of this thing, aren't we?
Well, Bill, we're in the 15th year of the declared drought in Arizona. City of Tucson has a drought response plan that helps us respond to conditions of drought, and we have been in stage one drought since that initial declaration made by the governor at the time.
And what does that mean, stage one?
Well, at stage one, the trigger is either at the regional level or statewide, there is some concern about water supply. So our supply itself is not impacted. There's no threat to it. The main points at stage one is just for Tucson Water and the city to continue to emphasize the importance of water conservation, the importance of not wasting water. And I think the only real action in there required is for city departments to conduct water audits of facilities and identify where the potential for reductions in water use would be. And that was accomplished several years ago.
Here's Sarah.
Are there things that, I know we talk a lot about water conservation, and are you speaking about it on a like residential, don't water the sidewalk sort of scale, or are we talking about it more system-wide? At what point do individual efforts just sort of pile up to become aggregate, or is saving water individually something that even makes a difference?
Well, I always tell people that even the little things that we do at home make a big difference. The behavioral sorts of things like shutting the water off when you brush your teeth. It may not seem like a lot in your household, but when you start to multiply that by your neighbors and your neighborhood, the subdivision, and keep moving, that adds up to a lot of water that can be saved from a very simple measure. Once we begin to identify those bigger sorts of things, I think irrigation management, landscape irrigation management is something that we continually work on. That's something where we can probably get even greater results.
Is the conservation message something that people get excited about, or is it kind of, you know, have we gotten to the point where we're just so used to it that that's how we operate now?
I think people always want to learn more about water conservation, and we do still have a very strong water conservation program here. Our information and education programs are always booked. Always filled.
Is Pete the Beak coming back?
Pete the Beak is actually still around. He just doesn't have the big role that he used to before. We actually, for any listeners that have been here for a while, we're approaching 40 years of active water conservation programming. Over that time, the need behind the program has changed. That's why the initial program starting in the mid-70s was called Beat the Peak. And what we were trying to beat, that peak that we were trying to beat, was the last couple of months in June before the summer rains came. We did not have, back then, the infrastructure in place to pull the water out of the ground and deliver it to customers to meet demands. And so we really emphasized outdoor water use for many, many years. We have been so successful in our efforts to reduce peak demand that that's not even a concern for us now. We have made investments in infrastructure. As we talk about drought, it's not just the demand side of the equation, but the supply side of the equation. We've made significant investments in making sure that we have water supply, and we don't find ourselves in the positions that a lot of these other communities find, where they have no water. So that's a big difference.
Russ has been waiting on the live line, the Buckmaster Show live line. Russ called 790-2040, and we also invite other listeners to call as well. Go ahead, Russ. You're with Fernando Molina.
Well, great. Thanks. First of all, congratulations on the Hall of Fame, Bill. I'm really proud that you have that.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Russ.
I have a question and a comment. But first of all, the first question is, a friend of mine in Los Angeles, his pool broke and it's been empty for a while, and now he's not allowed to fill his pool because of the water conservation. And he was telling me they're very concerned because they have a thing called now that they're worried about called toilet to tap. In other words, the use of reclaimed water actually for household use. It will ever come to that? That's my question. My comment is this. I think we have a credibility gap where we keep saying we have a water shortage, and yet we keep on building these wood frame stucco houses one after another in southern Arizona. So if we really are having that type of a water problem, why do we keep having growth? So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Russ.
Off there. Yeah.
Two-part question, it sounds
okay,
like.
Well, let me address the second part of that question, the water shortage. I think we don't project that there's any shortage going on. I think if people go online to our website, look up the 2012 update to the long-range plan, you can see very clearly our projections show that the way that we manage our Central Arizona Project water that we get here, we're actually banking water. We're storing water every year. We have a 144,000-plus acre-foot allocation that we put into the aquifers here in our Clearwater facilities. And we're only pumping out slightly less than 100,000 acre-feet to meet demands every year. So we're storing about 44,000, 50,000 acre-feet each year. This is now the third year that we'll be doing that. It's a limited supply, so we do know approximately when we think the demands will exceed that 144,000 acre-feet. But that's probably not expected till 20 or 30 years down the road at least, and probably even longer. So as far as water shortage, I think we've done a good job managing this. I think the mayor and council have supported our efforts to really bolster our water supply. Our customers certainly have as well, because we're not in any danger of having a water shortage like you're seeing in other communities. With respect to the first issue that the gentleman brought up, the recycled water, we do have a recycled water plan, master plan, and that does, as we look well into the future, I remind people as I go out and speak into the community, we plan at least 50 years out. So, you know, we're already, even though we know that we have a sustainable water supply available to us through 2040, through 2050, we're already considering what we need to do next. And one of the options that we have, and one that we're actively studying and looking at, is taking this effluent water. And the effluent is the product that comes out of Pima County's wastewater treatment facilities. 30 years ago, we started using some of that water for our reclaimed water system, which is what irrigates parks and schools and golf courses. But we're not using all of that water. And so what we're starting to investigate is, what would it take to successfully use that water resource as part of our drinking water supply? And so there's no urgency. We have the ability to learn from all these other cities that are in dire straits, and really they really have no other alternative. But this is something that we think is important, because we have a lot of community investments already made in water in the last 10 years. We have this water supply that we've already paid for. In fact, we've paid for it twice. We've paid to bring it here, we paid to use it, and then we pay to clean it up. And right now, the water that the effluent that does not get used for irrigation purposes is basically we lose control of that. We don't think that's a really good investment. So as far as resource management, it really is a good strategy. But and as far as the investments that we're making in the resource, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to just lose control of that.
There is kind of a psychological component, though, with this.
Oh, there certainly is. And we're spending a lot of time right now going out into the community, talking to groups about this, and getting information and feedback from those groups, because we want to make sure that as we move forward with this, people understand what we're talking about, people understand what it takes to purify the water to the point that it is safe to drink. And we believe that it's something that we can do. And because it is a renewable water supply, it's replenished in a human time scale. It's actually one of our preferential water supplies. Our goal is to maximize the use of our renewable water supplies. Colorado River water is one of those, and this effluent is another one. Before we start really looking at non-renewable water supplies.
All right, it's exactly 12:15 on the Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, live streaming on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Right now, we're going to take a break here from the people who support the Buckmaster Show. We thank them. And Tom has selected a couple of songs for us. We'll be hearing through the hour on our 60s bump music, featuring today Simon and Garfunkel, one of the iconic songs of the 60s, America.
Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. Some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes, and this is Wagner Pie.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering its promises, completing 149 out of 200 intersection improvements, 48 of 80 pedestrian safety crossings, 108 of 200 bus pullouts, and 226 miles of 500 promised bike lanes. Since the 2006 voter approval of the RTA plan, some 650 projects are completed. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care.
Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Monday for the Monday Political Face-Off featuring commentators Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom. How does Tucson prepare for World Refugee Day? We'll look at that. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, with anywhere in the world live streaming, podcasts, and show archive at buckmastershow.com. Back to the Buckmaster Show as we listen to Simon and Garfunkel, our featured bump music on our Friday Focus interview today with Fernando Molina. Mr. Molina is a spokesman for Tucson Water. And before we go to the two callers on the live line and another question from Sarah Garrett Gaston, the Star, we had a quick email that was sent to Bill at buckmastershow.com as a follow-up to talking about, the question was, Fernando, will the effluent be eventually recharged like the CAP water or directly fed into the potable water system?
Well, we're looking at the option that would include recharge as part of the treatment process. Recharging results in this process called soil aquifer treatment, and this is the natural process, natural purification process as it takes place as water is moving down through the soil into the aquifer. So probably about 85% of any constituents that we would be concerned, viruses, those chemicals of concern that we're looking at, are taken care of through that process. Well, that would be followed up with two more processes, some sort of membrane filtration like reverse osmosis or microfiltration. And then finally, we would use an advanced oxidation process. This is something that basically destroys almost anything left in that water. It would be very clean water. These are processes, as I said, other communities are already doing this. We have the ability to learn from them and find out what works best here in Tucson.
Let's let Sarah jump back in before the two callers hang on, but I want to get Sarah back into the conversation.
One of the things about conservation is the less water you use, the more expensive your water bill seems to be. Can you explain that?
Sure. We call this the conundrum of water conservation because it actually happens with energy. I mean, anytime you conserve the resource, you're selling less of that, and it does impact revenues. And I have to say that there is some truth to that. A portion of any rate increase that we would require is required to offset the reduction in sales and the reduction in revenues that we have from a conservation program, whether it's a reduction because somebody participated in one of our programs or just on their own decided to use less water. So probably less than half of any rate increase is attributed to those reductions in sales. The rest of the increase would come from just our increases for energy costs, maintenance costs, things of that nature. And I think the other part of that question is, what would our bills look like if we did not implement water conservation programs? And I'd like to point out to people that if we were using water today at the same rate that we were in the 1970s, 200 gallons per person per day, that's almost double the amount of water that we would be using. I can assure you the water bills would be high. They would be much higher than they are, even with these small incremental increases that we see because of conservation impacts. Imagine Pima County recently spent several hundred million dollars building and upgrading their wastewater treatment facilities. Well, if they had to build those based on 5-gallon flush toilets, I can pretty much assure you that the cost for building a wastewater treatment facility would be much greater because there would be much greater volume coming through. In general, we have these incremental increases, but in the long run, in the short run, we have these incremental increases, but in the long run, it really does result in a lower water bill.
Chuck has been waiting, and we're on topic with Chuck, I think. He has a water rate question. Chuck, go ahead, please.
Sarah, you stole my thunder.
Sorry about that.
Great minds think alike.
Yes. you know, to punish the consumer for using less water because that's what you people want us to do doesn't make sense at all. Doesn't make sense. We should be rewarded for doing such a good job. We shouldn't have to pay a higher rate just because we're using less water.
Okay,
and
thank you, Chuck.
I just don't buy what you're selling. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chuck.
You know, I understand how you feel. This is a sentiment that gets expressed to us a lot when we're out in the community talking about rates. The rate structure is set up so that those people who actually have been conserving and have reduced really do get rewarded, because those lower volume users, those people that are within the first usage block of our billing structure, generally see the least amount of increase. And, you know, unfortunately, our costs continue to rise, and we need to be able to offset the impact on our customers, but at the same time, we have to fit this all into our long-range water resources planning. We need to make sure that we can get more mileage, so to speak, out of the water that we have today, because we live in a desert. It is a resource that we need to manage very carefully, and that's what we manage for. And rates is just one of the tools that we have to be able to manage that.
Dan has been waiting very patiently to speak with Mr. Molina. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for your forum. This is concerning the California water situation, which is obviously coming in this direction. The people in California will be drinking, if not now, some communities will be drinking soon effluent sewer water. But at the same time, in the state of California, our legislature will not allow that effluent water to be flushed down to the ocean because it's not good enough for the bait fish, and 30% of the fresh water in California has to go to the ocean for these fish. But the fish can't use the same bad drinking water that the public's going to be drinking, and I don't know why our newspaper here doesn't keep us informed of this kind of stuff.
Okay. Mr. Molina, any comment about that before we move on?
I think there's always a really big question about the safety of recycled water. Mm-hmm. And there are, I think the caller mentioned, there are already several communities that are taking this effluent, they're treating it, and they're purifying it to beyond a drinking water standard and incorporating it into their water supplies. There are not very many that are putting it directly back in California that I'm aware of, that are putting it right directly back into the pipelines. There are some communities in the United States that do that. California, I'm not sure of that. There's always this environmental buffer. As I mentioned, for us, it would be our aquifer. I think the important thing to remember also is that we will continually be monitoring this water. This is our public health that we're making sure that we aren't causing any problems with. So we're going at this very carefully. We're doing a lot of research. We're doing a lot of studies on this. We're meeting with other communities. I have toured several of the facilities in Southern California to see how they operate. And I think done right, it's a fairly safe way of extending our water supplies.
Well, one of the questions that always comes up is desalinization. Over in the Middle East, they have huge desalinization plants, and of course they have deep pockets as
yes.
well, and can do that. We have a plant right in the Yuma area. Is that correct?
Well, there's a plant was built many years ago, decades
yeah.
now, in the Yuma area, and this was designed to treat some of the tail water or runoff water from the agricultural fields in the area, and then that water would then be put back into the Colorado River to help meet our obligations for water going into Mexico. So that plant never really, that was very early technology. It never really operated properly. I think they're looking at trying to make that a better facility. But I know there's a plant being built north of San Diego in Carlsbad precisely to help meet demands there. The thing about these kinds of desalination facilities, I mean, there's environmental issues that come into the discussion, but from just a water processing perspective, they're very expensive to operate. They're very energy intensive. This is why you see a lot of them in mm-hmm. the Middle East. Mm-hmm. The energy is really not a big cost for them like it might be for us here.
Mm-hmm. But the technology is improving.
Correct? Oh, this is yeah. the technology for desalination, yeah. the technology for water purification in general is just improving tremendously over time, and that's another advantage that we have. We can see the technology improve. We can see the costs come down for us. A purification facility like what we're talking about here is not that different than a desalination plant. It's a lot of the same sorts of processes you're going through. But again, we have the benefit that it's not urgent for us at this point in time.
Sarah, a quick final question?
I think people are concerned when you hear about what's going on in California that it's just a matter of time until we're directly affected. Can you talk about that?
Well, there's two major problems going on in California. Number one is their water supplies are literally drying up. I think there can be discussions about the causes for this, but the fact remains their reservoirs are drying out. There has never been groundwater management at the same level that there is in California, at the same level that there is in Arizona. So on the supply side of things, they have some issues that they need to work out, I think. On the demand side of things, I know Bill and I were talking about this earlier. The big challenge in California is reducing demands, and I think they've, in many communities, what they've created is an artificial environment that simply is not sustainable when you don't have the water. We went through this 40 years ago. We're now approaching 40 years of actively asking the community to conserve water, and one of the first things that changed here was our landscape types and our preferences for a desert landscape. Time and time again, when we do our customer surveys, one of the questions that we ask is conservation important here? And 90% of the respondents will say yes. And when we ask why, mm-hmm. the response is we're in a desert. Water is a limited supply. That's another big challenge in California is how do you manage these demands and get people to come down to a long-term sustainable sort of landscape.
And again, it's kind of a psychological thing. People understand we live in the desert here, yes, in Tucson, but over in California, you live by an ocean and you think there's plenty of water. And you don't think necessarily that California is a place where water shortages occur.
Correct.
And people that move there think, well, there's plenty of water.
Correct. And water is one of those things that you don't really worry about it until you turn the tap on in the morning and nothing's there.
Yeah.
Or it comes out and it smells funny or something like that. But, you know, we try really hard to kind of manage all aspects of water. We look at water supplies. We make sure the quality matches to the use. We have to maintain our infrastructure. And this issue of conserving the water and making sure we're not wasting water, it's all connected in the end for our customers.
All right, Fernando Molina, where can people find out? You say that you speak to quite a few groups. You're a very busy guy. If someone would like you to come to speak to their group, what's the best way to do that?
They can call the Tucson Water Public Information Office, and that mm-hmm. number is 791-4331, or they can just go to our website and put a request in through our website email.
All right. Thank you very much, Fernando. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you for having me here, Bill.
All right. 12:32 on the Buckmaster Show. Sarah Garrett Gaston, the star, will stick around. We'll have our Friday roundtable portion of the program. Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News will also join us. That's coming right up.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I'm on your side.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Yeah, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garber on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data, because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us.
How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $99 per month. Plus, get your first month free. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 8/30/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Sarah Gert Gasson is here from the Arizona Daily Star. She's editorial writer and columnist, and she also loves 60s music. Are you pleased with my selection for today?
I am indeed, and I just need to say for the record that Art Garfunkel has beautiful eyes.
Wow. Yeah. And we heard earlier America from the Bookends album.
Very nice. Would you
agree with me, and I know you're pretty much into music, that song is almost the iconic identification marker for the 60s.
I would say it is definitely up there. I don't know if everyone sees 60s music as in the same way, but It is definitely up there.
Okay. Dan Shearer joining us, and Dan is too young. Not that Sarah's old.
The only reason, excuse me.
No, she's, boy, did I step on it. I really stepped on it. I Sarah loves 60s music.
Even though I was not on the planet.
There you go.
In the 60s.
Yes, and Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, likes 60s music, but not as much as I did because he was definitely too young for the 60s. Dan, I want to formally acknowledge your help while I was over in Hawaii. Did a great job. You hosted our Friday roundtable. And you also hosted the Monday Political Face-Off. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And about that Political Face-Off, boy, that can get heated.
No kidding.
I walked out of here once and thought I'd been in the lion's den.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, you wear a referee shirt.
It definitely gets
heated. But Dan, thanks so much for pitching in.
I enjoyed it.
Big story of the week. The governor yesterday said that he would like to divert more money from the State Land Trust program and put that money to education. Dan, the reaction to this, the folks who have been very, very critical of Governor Ducey, about his education policy are kind of on board. I think they see it, let's put it this way, a step in the right direction.
Right, and I think that's a great way to put it, is that they're kind of on board because there are so many questions, because this land, of course, is supposed to be generating money for education and for about a dozen other programs, including state prisons, by the way, and a lot of people don't understand how it works. But the question is it going to be eating away at the future here? And the other question is, why did he make the decision? Knowing this governor for, I know it's just been a short time, but my thought is that he considered the economic ramifications of having a very low-rated school system in the state, and that's probably what is driving it. And he realized, look, businesses are going to look at this, and their employees are going to say, we don't want to go there.
Yeah,
I think that's helping drive it.
And Sarah, this announcement, which was made yesterday afternoon, came out within 24 hours of a couple of polls that put Arizona either lowest in the nation on per capita classroom spending or within two or three from the bottom.
Yeah, and that was census data, and
yes,
it wasn't. So that's not the kind of thing where you can say, "Oh, well, it's an ideologically skewed survey or something like that." It's just plain facts. I think that the reality is that the poor showing, literally, on Arizona's public school spending does have ramifications. And I'm encouraged that Governor Ducey is beginning to see this. I don't know that the trust land plan is the best way to go. You, as Dan said, you have that, danger of eating your seed corn for the future. But also, I think we also need to remember that not so long ago, he was in front of a group of business leaders saying, don't you dare try to put together
a tax.
Yeah, a tax, even, to put it on the ballot, a proposition, because he would fight it tooth and nail. So I think we need to remember that and not just wholesale say, yes, this is the best thing ever, just because it shows some indication of recognizing that our schools are underfunded.
And I don't know, Dan, if this would even pass. It would be, it would depend, I think, on the way it was sold and the way this was marketed. If
right.
You're just talking about, shall we change the state or sell some of the state trust land, people, unless they see that keyword of education in there,
right,
I don't know if it would pass.
And the campaign
to pass for this to happen.
Exactly. And the campaign will go something along the lines of, do you want more money for education?
Mm-hmm.
Then just vote yes. And that's
right.
Really how it's going to look. Because again, that whole idea of state trust land and what it does and its purpose and everything, and this is not public land. This is the state trust land. For a lot of people, it's just the eyes glaze over. But if you say, look, Janie's school is going to get more money,
right,
they're going to vote yes. Real early on, obviously, I don't think it's going to have a problem passing. I really don't, because early on, people are, as you said, kind of on board.
Right, right.
But I think the key will be in the fine print that it's the proceeds has to be used for public education and can't be diverted.
There has to be oversight. There'd have to be a committee to make sure that happens.
And it needs to be in whatever language and is binding, because we've seen that happen before where voters say, yes, we want this to happen, and then the money gets used for something else.
It's currently happening,
yes.
Right? Is there waiting
exactly
for that
settlement? Yeah, but again, state trust land is to be used for education purposes. It has been. It hasn't been abused. He just wants to throw a little bit more on the pile. So hopefully that is not going to be an issue, but it is something to watch out for.
Jim, our friend Jim Kelly would like to weigh in on this discussion about school budgeting. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, good afternoon, Dan and Sarah.
Hey, Jim.
Number one, I think it's brilliant what the governor is doing, and I think it's very creative and much needed. We've been accused of using the seed corn, but I think what we're really doing is eating the fruits of the labor. So I'm very much in agreement on using the state trust lands. However, there is one thing that I would very much like the state to do, and that is to modernize the computer programs of every single school so that we have much better reporting of things like grades and attendance and all the things that measure a school's performance so that it can be tracked and seen by everybody and the transparency be there. Schools need to modernize, and they need to modernize their administrative capacities tremendously. And I would hope that a big shot in the arm of some extra cash, that that's what they would use that cash for, so that they can move into the 21st century and out of the 19th century that so many of our schools are administratively run with.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
I think it's important also to say that, I mean, technology absolutely is critical, but kids in classrooms are dealing with some really out-of-date technology as well, and so that's something to keep in mind, too.
Sarah, you and your staff worked very hard on the week-long series on the future of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. You traveled to a community in Georgia, and you wrote about that earlier this week, a community that has an Air Force base that really everybody, it seems like, in town loves the base. And then today you wrote about Las Vegas, and that kind of hit home for me because early in my career I spent 6 years reporting with NBC Radio in Las Vegas in the 70s, and I agree with you. When it comes to getting something done in the city of Las Vegas, the word is, let's do it.
Yes, bigger and better than anywhere else.
Yeah, they just go ahead and they do it. I mean, if there's a question about noise of an aircraft, that question would be muted.
Yeah, yes. And what I found in, so tomorrow's installment will be about my visit to Cannon Air Force Base in outside Clovis, New Mexico. And that one will examine how their base was on the base realignment and closure list in 2005. They switched from a flying mission to a special operations mission. And so that, I think, is instructive in how a community needs to keep an open mind about what their base can and should be. But for Las Vegas, the key there is they say yes, yes, yes to pretty much everything, except when it comes to anything that could endanger or even remotely impact Nellis and Creech Air Force Base and the training range around that. They talked about the base, Nellis, is on the northeast. I'm terrible with directions. I think it's northeast side of the strip, and you can see the strip from the base entrance. But there's a giant raceway just a short distance from the base, and there were some developers who wanted to put up, you know, swanky condos there, and that got swatted down really pretty fast because it was something that could potentially just cause a problem. To say that it would, but it could. And so they just said, nope, that's not going to happen. And I thought that was really instructive about what a city will do to protect from encroachment, because that's the number one issue. Mm-hmm.
Before I talk with you about the editorial on Sunday, I want to bring Dan in here. And it's interesting about North Las Vegas, Dan. That's where Mike Varney, who is head of the Metro Chamber of Commerce, was the head of the North Las Vegas Chamber. And when I first heard the news about Mike coming down here to Tucson, I thought, boy, is this going to be a change from what he's used to, where everybody in the business community really gets behind the business community.
Well, and Tucson is this very different that way. Again, I've said it's out of step with the rest of Arizona. I don't mean that necessarily in a negative way, but you can't
spend
come in
time
here
in the valley. And
yes,
Phoenix is a lot like Las Vegas,
exactly,
where they decide to do something, they get it done.
You're going to get it done. I want to take Sarah back to Valdosta, if I could. Okay. The story there, it's a much smaller community than Tucson, probably about a tenth of the size, and the military base is pretty much everything. Can we really duplicate that kind of enthusiasm in Tucson for a base that Valdosta has? They pretty much, I'm going to assume, that's all they have.
Well, they have a university there. The base, Moody Air Force Base, goes back, you know, decades and decades. And so, yes, it is. It's a metro region of about 150,000 people, and it is much smaller, and it does have a very, very close relationship with Moody. But part of it is, I found, so part of it is the small town, you know, but part of it also is just, this is part of their identity. It's not what I found more in Clovis was, we really need Cannon economically. Mm-hmm. But in Valdosta, what I found was, they're part of us, we're part of them. It was much more part of the fabric of the community. So I think can we replicate that? No, I don't think so in the same way. But I think part of what Tucson can do is recognize that the base does exist, because you can live in Tucson and not really, if you don't look up, not really know that there's an Air Force base here.
Well, but the series is also built on the idea that the A-10 is probably going away. On Saturday, I met with Representative Martha McSally, and we were talking, and she says, no, it should, the A-10 really should fly through 2028, and I believe that she's going to have an op-ed piece in your paper probably on Sunday, probably saying just that. So for her, this all the talk of this is premature. Now, if it does happen, she says everyone has to get united for a new mission for the base, but she certainly doesn't think the A-10 is going away.
Well, I think even if Congress is able to keep the year-to-year-to-year going, the Air Force has made it very plain that the leadership anyway, that it is being phased out. And the natural life of the A-10 is limited. I mean, it's not, so it's, I mean, 2028 is what, 10, 15 years from now. So it's not something, we're not talking about maybe the next 3 years, but we need to be thinking far down the line, not just fix, you know, the problem with the A-10 being around and then feel like we're done. We need to be planning far, far down the line. And I think that's something that we really need to understand.
Is that going to be some of the message that we will expect Sunday?
Yes. Yes, it is. And what we will also be saying in the Arizona Daily Star on the editorial page is that one of the lessons that we came away with was from my trip to Valdosta. They have one guy, Parker Green, who has been their person,
the
point man. Yeah. He's the one who goes to the Pentagon. He goes to Capitol Hill. Other people help. But they know. I mean, the point was made over and over. They know who to call. The Defense Department knows who to call. And in Tucson, we haven't really had that. We've had really great efforts, really great and commendable work, but by volunteer organizations, by people who also have businesses to run and other obligations. So what we're going to recommend is that this, we need to not replicate, but come up with our own, and that it needs to be a publicly funded, paid employee who works with a lobbyist in Washington, but that it needs to be, we need to professionalize. It's time for our efforts to mature and be funded. We're recommending that it be placed in the county, which is not a slight on the city in terms of accomplishment or anything, but just because that's the regional stage of government, and that it should be jointly funded by the city, the county, and the other municipalities, if at all possible. But if people aren't willing to get on board, then the county should go ahead, because it really is something that is paramount.
Tucson Forward obviously doesn't like the F-35. They want to keep that from coming here. However, they are part of the discussion here. And do you think sometimes we give them too big a voice? Because I don't see too many people other than those in that group who oppose it.
Right. I think the squeaky wheel does get the grease sometimes. Yeah. And I heard in my reporting over and over that the base supporters, people who even who are support the base, think it's good, understand the vitality of it, don't pick up the phone, don't send the email. And so that's one of the messages that we are putting out there too, that it's if you don't hear anything positive, you assume that the people who are speaking negatively and don't want it speak for the community, and from our reporting, that's just not the case.
All right. Sarah Garrett-Gaston, The Star. We'll look for your work this weekend as the series continues. And Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Sahrita Sun. Again, Dan, thank you for your efforts. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Weekend Watch is next with Matt Russell.
Mama pajama rolled out of bed, she ran to the police station. When Papa found out, he began to shout, he started the investigation. And it's against the law, it was against the law.
Hello?
Hey, honey, just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you landed 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 650 projects to date, including pedestrian safety crossings, intersection safety improvements, and bus pullouts, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com. Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Time for Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, brought to you by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. When the temperature goes over 100 degrees here in Tucson, it's always a good time to think about heading 3 hours east to Silver City in Grant County, where the temperature is a lot cooler because it's a higher elevation and so many things to do. Great hiking in the area, antiquing, and fine restaurants in downtown historic Silver City. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org, the full listing of things to do and great places to stay, like Casitas de Gila Guest Houses. Let's welcome now the host of Weekend Watch, Inside Tucson business, food, and beverage columnist, award-winning publicist, all-around good guy and foodie, Mr. Matt Russell. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Bill. Staring down a delicious weekend. It's right in front of us.
It sure is. Time to toast one, my friend. Time to wine taste.
Indeed. You know, most of the wine stores around town host wine tasting events throughout the week, but my pick this weekend is Catavinos Wine Shop over on Alvernon, just south of Fort Lowell. Now, what I love most about Catavinos is you can taste a full flight of six wines for only $10, but if you buy a bottle, they're going to knock $2 off that tasting. And get this, there is not one bottle of wine in the entire store that is more than $15 a bottle. So the tasting is today and tomorrow from 4 to 8. I say pick up some wines for the weekend without breaking the bank.
Kingfisher does a nice job with fresh fish, don't they?
They sure do, and we're really involved here in Summer Road Trip at Kingfisher, this rotating regional menu that they do all summer long, and this week it's all about the Pacific Northwest. Now, as you'd imagine, as you said, fresh fish anchors this menu with selections like an Alaskan cod with a smoked mussel salsa, but there's also options for landlubbers like a hanger steak that's been soaked in some Seattle beer. Even the cocktails take on a regional theme, which is a lot of fun. The Pacific Northwest menu runs through June 17th, so I say road trip at the Kingfisher this weekend.
Talking about bacon almost every week here on Weekend Watch.
We can't get enough of it. This next event is actually on Monday night, June the 8th, but it sounded so good I had to include it in Weekend Watch. Union Public House is going to be hosting a whiskey bacon dinner on Monday night that will pair five different whiskeys with five dishes that are each built around a different variation of bacon, like a pork belly brisket and fettuccine with house bacon and Roquefort cheese. Even bacon even makes an appearance on the dessert course, which you have to see to believe. A few seats are still left at Union's Whiskey Bacon Dinner, so grab one while you still can, Bill.
And in the column, we're going to do some tea tasting.
Yeah, you know, tea is no longer just for enjoying out of a cup, Bill. And I sat down with two local chefs who steep and smoke their teas to bring new levels of flavor to their dishes. It's a fascinating story, and you can read all about it in this week's edition of Inside Tucson.
Good weekend to you, Matt. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
The Bill Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content. On behalf of the team here at KVOI, Tom Fairbanks, thanks, Tom, Ed Alexander, Ray Allen, of course, Jerry Cross, Mr. and Mrs. Martin, and, of course, my executive assistant, Rosemary Brad. I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend.